Incoming transmission. Incoming transmission. Let's boogie. Welcome to the B-Movie Boys, where bad movies get the love they deserve and the respect that they don't. I'm Dave Michaels.
I'm Brian Betts.
And this week on the program, we are talking about what is arguably, or inarguably actually, the grossest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Definitely top of my gross list.
And I've not stopped thinking about it since watching it, and it's been like 48 hours, and no, I did not watch this one twice.
No, I wouldn't expect you to. I definitely did not watch it twice, and also have not been able to stop thinking about it.
We are talking about 1972's Pink Flamingos, directed by John fucking Waters.
That's deserved. John fucking Waters.
Brian, have you ever seen Pink Flamingos?
No. Had I seen it, I probably would have put a stop to this.
You think so?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know how soon I'll be revisiting this one, though.
You're making this feel like this is like a 9/11 of your life in terms of movies.
Honestly, it might have the same impact on my being moving forward.
Listen, all I'm saying is I don't see the difference between two planes flying into towers and watching a man's asshole sing Surfing Bird.
Wella, wella. Yeah. Have you seen this before?
No, I've only seen parts of it and clips of it. And now that I've put it all together, I'm actually blown away by this movie.
Blown away is an interesting way of putting it. How so?
This is one of the most fascinating movies I've ever seen.
I think I agree with that. This is fascinating.
Just in the sense of what he was going for and how he went about doing it and what was achieved. And some might call that the audacity of it all.
The audacity. What a great way of putting that. It also just so happens to be the first category on the Schlockometer, our patented scoring system. But before we can get into that, we need to tell these people what Pink Flamingos is all about. We need to regale them with the tale.
Do you think they're ready for that if they've never seen Pink Flamingos? Right now we're doing them a service.
Yeah, spoiler warning, but more importantly, content warning. You can never be fully prepared for this movie. Even if you know everything that's going to happen, you're not ready.
John Waters, the director, the writer, the producer, the everything on this movie, he has said that he literally tried to think of things for this movie that weren't illegal to put on film yet, but should be.
Yet. Yeah, nailed it.
He literally put on the poster for this movie that it is an exercise in poor taste.
He really wanted to push the boundaries.
Variety saw this movie, and they called it one of the most vile, stupid, and repulsive films ever made. And John Waters took that quote and put it on the poster, then put it on the VHS case, then put it everywhere.
Of course.
He knew his people who he was going for it. So I ask you again, listener, are you ready?
I'm going to take that as a yes.
I think I'm going to take it as a bunch of rude fucks don't respond.
Right? Like, say something.
Look at us doing all the talking up here. We try to include them, but they're not interested.
Nope. I'm just sitting there, listening, not joining in.
I knew a chicken who once did that. We'll get there.
We'll get to the chicken. There's always chicken, apparently.
Good. Because notorious criminal Divine lives on a pink trailer in Maryland under the alias Babs Johnson, with her egg-obsessed mother Edie, her son Crackers, and their companion Cotton. They've been named the filthiest people alive by a tabloid, and they take that title pretty darn seriously.
I'll say, this is already just wow, with Edie and Crackers and Cotton.
Which part is the craziest as we meet this family? I don't know what to even call them.
I don't know. Is it the secret love between Cotton and Crackers? Is it the grown woman eating eggs in a playpen in the corner?
That's the grandma, yeah.
There's so many things.
She is obsessed with eggs. She's sitting in her underwear in a crib in the corner of this trailer park, and it is an adult-sized crib.
Sure is.
Or like a paddock.
A paddock.
I don't know the difference, except one involves horses. I'm pretty sure.
I think you might be hard-pressed to get a horse in this one. Then again, Maybe not.
Maybe not. I mean, this is an exercise of poor taste. And so far, we're starting off pretty tame, and I like that.
Across town, Connie and Raymond Marble are a pair of respectable criminals who are insanely jealous of Divine's fame. They run a black market baby selling ring to fund heroin distribution to school kids. So, you know, upstanding citizens. They decide that they're going to prove that they are actually the filthiest people alive.
Those mean streets of Baltimore and all these white people. They're going to try to prove that they're the filthiest people alive.
They have a good old-fashioned filth off.
All they have to do is drive the 1 hour that it takes to get to Philadelphia. They're instantly winners then. Instantly.
Doesn't get any filthier than Philly.
Doesn't. That's why the name is so darn close to it.
It's interesting that you said all these white people, because there is a noticeable lack of anything non-white in this movie. But I think that's probably a good thing for all parties involved.
100%.
Because that could have very easily veered off into very racist territory.
I don't think it would have. I think John Waters is in full control of this thing, and that's crazy to say.
You're not wrong.
The Marbles. They send a spy named Cookie to seduce Crackers to get the inside scoop on Babs' home life.
That's a lot to digest right there between the cookies and the crackers and the scoop.
It should be noted that Babs, played by Divine, is a drag queen.
It should be noted, yes.
It's very important. For things that are coming up later.
Yeah, super important.
But Cookie's going to seduce Crackers, and Cookie seduces Crackers so hard that Cookies has to include a live chicken in the sex that they have about it all.
To be fair, that's mostly for Cotton's benefit.
It is, and it's a live chicken for most of it.
It is a live chicken until it's not a live chicken.
This chicken. I feel like we need to describe what's happening here in great detail.
Yeah,
I don't want to, but I feel like it's necessary.
This chicken is a prop and also a participant in the middle of a cookie cracker sandwich.
It is a cuck that turns into a cuckoldoodle doer.
It's a cluck, if you will.
Exactly.
That gives its life to be involved.
Crackers grabs the chicken as he's doing the cookie and sticks the chicken. That is very much a live chicken.
A real live chicken.
They literally kill this chicken mid-coital scene. It's death by snoo-snoo.
It is death by snoo-snoo for the chicken. This movie.
These eggshells, man, they're so fun to walk on. They're so unnecessary to walk on.
Eggs? Do eggs come from chickens?
Brian, why are there so many chickens in these B-movies? This is the third one in a row.
This is the third one in a row with chickens, and I'm beginning to think it's a staple of the genre.
It might be a staple of the genre, and Birdemic is entirely about birds. And I'm sure he would have had chickens in that had he had the clip art.
Oh, yeah. If he had the chicken clip art, there would have been chickens.
There was an alive chicken. It got fucked to death. Let's keep going on with this movie.
For Divine's birthday, the Marbles mail her an actual box of human feces. With a card. You gotta have a birthday card. You can't just send somebody a present. You have to have a card. The card calls her a fatso. Divine, not grossed out by the poo. She's pissed that someone is challenging her status as the filthiest person alive. So she decides that whomever it was that sent this package must die.
We may have a plot now.
There's a good chance we have something of a plot.
If you need a string to pull on, this is the one. This is your only chance.
The neon-haired couple are coming for the filthy throne, and now they must pay.
So while the Marbles are out doing their evil deeds on the world with seducing, raping, flashing, you name it. They're out there. They're doing it. They're being a bunch of filthsters.
All the above, yeah.
Their manservant, Channing, another Gallagher-looking motherfucker. He dresses up as Connie Marble and starts trying to pretend like he's slinging around babies in this underground baby slinging ring. He's just playing around. He's having a good old time in this good old movie.
I cannot figure out Channing's motivation to do anything, and I don't think you need to.
Nope. just let him be. Just let him dress let up Channing in his drag Channing. And just let him try to give children away to strangers.
Sometimes you got to sell some babies to some lesbian couples so you can raise money to distribute your heroin to school children.
Subarus are big cars. They got a lot of space back there. You might as well get...
might as well buy some illegal babies from some basements.
Got to fill up that softball team somehow.
Channing has also devised a method so he doesn't have to actually have sex with these dungeon girls either. He can just take care of himself in his own hand and then inject it.
It's IVF.
As you do.
The old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
It's so gross watching this man jerk off because, yeah, we watched a man jerk off.
And he's got a tiny butt.
He does have a real tiny butt. But do you think that's in comparison to what we see later?
We will get there.
Because butts are ruined right now for me.
Everything is ruined for me.
I'm like waiting for you to say, like, I went to church this morning.
Thought about it.
The marbles, they show up. They're going to catch him in the act. They're completely outraged. They lock him in a closet. They're going to deal with him later. So they pretty much just pervert Harry Potter him. He's in the closet under the stairs now.
Get in there. We're going to figure this out later. Oh, his nipples touched the inside of my bras where my nipples have been.
Disgusting, right?
Ugh.
Also, is everyone in this movie word perfect when it comes to the script? Because it feels like everyone is perfect.
Yes. Yeah, it's insane. There's no improv happening here, which is bonkers.
I got Kevin Smith vibes watching this because Kevin Smith's scripts are word perfect for the most part.
Yeah.
This was very much that same vibe of, I know this is ridiculous and that this isn't natural, but this is the tone we're going for.
So yeah.
You're going to say it, damn it.
I think it's proven best when Channing is doing his recitation of the things that Raymond and Connie were saying to each other when they were sucking on their toes.
There's a lot of toe sucking in this movie.
And he just word for word says what they said in that scene. So it feels like we might be word perfect here.
John Waters knows a thing or two about making movies.
Yeah, that's honestly what a takeaway.
Yeah, I know.
In the middle of all this chaos, the guy who delivers eggs to the trailer every day confesses that he's head over heels in love with Edie, the egg lady.
He's the egg man. He comes and he opens up a briefcase that's full of eggs, and Edie, sitting in her adult crib in her underwear, talking about what she wants to do with these eggs, is picking out her selection. And the egg man is just getting off on this.
Her selection is all of them?
Made it easy, though, didn't it?
Sure did. They end up getting engaged, and he eventually carts her off in a wheelbarrow, which frees up an entire corner of the trailer, which is nice.
That is very nice. They got a lot of free space, a lot, either more or less eggs. Do you think they're going to keep buying eggs?
Probably not as many, but, you know, just in case Edie comes to visit, they should probably have some on hand.
In case the Eggman wheelbarrows her back to the home.
Well, that was one of her conditions of the marriage, was that she could come visit them whenever she wanted.
Well, that's awfully sweet and great. I hope she can... go back to her corner one day. This movie is so bizarre. Divine is going to throw a massive birthday party. And for the audience, it's really just a total fever dream. Because there's a snake act. There's a dancing Nazi. There's a regular Nazi. There's a guy who can flex his asshole to the beat of Surfin' Bird. And we need to just talk about this.
There's an image burned in my mind that will never go away. I am forever unclean and can never again listen to Surfin' Bird without picturing this prolapsed ass.
It is a man who is on a pedestal in front of an audience with his legs up in the air and his asshole is just wide.
This man
open,
full pretzel position, flexing his gaping anus perfectly in time.
And it looks like, you know, whenever you have like goofball friend who has their hand and they put the little googly eye eyeballs on their hand and then they make it look like their thumb is talking.
Yeah.
That's what the asshole looked like.
All it needed was some googly eyes.
Can you imagine that though?
God, did we just make this movie better?
Somehow. I looked away a lot during this scene. It was the first time this movie, like, I sucked it up and I started like, oh no. Like I felt embarrassed about it, but
it went on for so long.
That was what got me about it. It's so kind of like if you told Seth MacFarlane, just really show us how you feel, and he would just do this.
It would be one thing to have a singing asshole on screen, but to keep it on for as long as they did was definitely a choice.
This movie is full of choices.
So many choices.
Oh God, we're not even close to being done talking about this thing in so many ways. The Marvels think all the cops are going to bust up the party, but Divine and her guests, they just ambush the cops. They kill them all. They literally eat them.
Yeah, cannibalism, check.
There are so many boxes getting checked in this movie. Maybe not booms? We'll get there?
Maybe, I don't know. To get revenge for the police raid, Divine and Crackers sneak into the Marbles' house. They don't steal anything. They just lick and rub themselves over every piece of furniture in the house to mark it with their filth and reclaim their dominance. And this has some sort of magical properties. And of course, while they're doing this, they get all riled up. And that leads to a scene that was very unfortunate.
I believe when me and you were watching this together, all I wrote to you was, so, this is happening.
Yeah, we, before it started, I said, I don't like where this is going.
No, because everything about it says, surely they're not going to go there.
They're not going to actually do this, are they? But in the back of your head,
you go, they're absolutely going there. So just like there was a pretzel of a man on a pedestal showing his asshole, there was the pretzel in my head.
They were like, hey, you know what? A scene later, let's outdo that.
They did it. They did it. They did it. They did it.
The best way to say this, incestuous, unsimulated drag queen fellatio.
The drag queen mom blows the sun right there on the couch and we see it all.
We see everything and they didn't do any trick angles or anything. This is actually happening.
On screen, blowy.
Apparently Divine and Danny Mills were actually like good friends before this.
And after?
Which made it very awkward, I assume.
Or.
Huh? I've never been propositioned quite that way, Dave.
Do you know the most insane thing about this scene, though?
Oh, please tell me.
We haven't peaked.
No, we haven't peaked.
Incestuous, unsimulated drag queen fellatio is still on the upslope of filth in this movie. We are not there yet. We're not at the mountaintop.
Hard to believe.
I can't believe it. And this is the part of the movie where I genuinely got curious of like, how far do we go? Because now I understand that we're in it. How far are we going to go?
How far can we possibly go?
This is Kramer driving the car on empty in Seinfeld. Just got a Thelma and Louise, hold on, and we're going together. We have to go together on this thing. So the Marbles, they retaliate by burning Divine's trailer to the ground. But when they go home to celebrate, their furniture just rejects them.
This is maybe my favorite part of the movie.
The cushions are literally like flipping them up to eject them from sitting on it.
Yeah.
Because they've been defiled.
They have some sort of divinity from Divine licking them that now they reject their less filthy owners.
They have the power of being licked by the filthiest person alive.
Oh, this movie.
While the furniture's busy rejecting the Marbles upstairs, downstairs in their sex dungeon with their girls that they've kidnapped, they find out that they've escaped. They've castrated Channing. They just let him bleed out, die. Poor guy. He got Harry Pottered by people pervier than him. And then he got his Dumbledore blown off by the Nevada cadaver by some sex prisoners. You know how it goes.
Yeah. It's hard not to root for the sex prisoners, though.
Are there good guys and bad guys in this movie? And I'm using that term loosely. I understand we are being very gender fluid in this entire thing.
There's a lot of bad guys in this movie. And then there are, I would say, victims.
Are we included on that part of it?
It feels like it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, nobody jerked off in their hand and injected it into me, though.
Yet.
Touché.
And this seems like the perfect time to introduce the new tier on Patreon.
So naturally, the next thing that has to happen, Divine kidnaps the Marbles at gunpoint. She brings them to the ruins of her burnt down trailer and calls the media to witness a trial. That is with full finger quotes.
Full finger quotes.
Divine finds them guilty of first-degree stupidity and assholism, tars and feathers them, and then executes them both right on camera.
Major Joker vibes.
Oh, big time. I actually had a philosophical question, like a quandary at this point. The journalists that she invited to document this, are they obligated to just be journalists and record what's happening? Or should they be contacting the authorities and trying to stop this? Because they know there is going to be a murder here.
I have a follow-up question to your question.
Okay.
Are you really willing to have a moral quandary in today's day and age about journalism after you just watched what is the equivalent of a YouPorn category stumble upon?
Even that category, they have to add step.
That's a good point.
So arguably worse than that. You're right. This might not be the place for a moral quandary.
But it is the place for Divine to decide to move the family to Boise to spread their filth to the Midwest.
As you do.
But before the credits roll, she follows a dog down the street and enthusiastically snacks on some fresh doggy dookie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonder. And we see it.
It's a wonder on a film with a $12,000 budget, so they're not faking that.
Nope. It's pretty much like you're watching the Zapruder film, but instead it's a drag queen eating dog shit. Instead of JFK eating...
Just like the Zapruder just film. Shit. Just eating shit.
They both ate shit drastically different ways is what I'm getting at.
Yeah. No, I see the connection. Whoo!
I can't believe we just watched a human being eat dog shit and smile at the camera and just lean in.
I very nearly lost my lunch.
It is the perfect button to this movie. That is, again, an exercise in poor taste. You cannot top this ending, this very famous ending.
That's gotta be the worst taste.
We could watch Bad Taste, the Peter Jackson movie. But now that Babs or Divine or it's all the same, really, at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now that they've proven that they are the filthiest person in cinematic history, realistically, we could finally leave this movie. And that is Pink Flamingos from 1972, directed by John fucking Waters. Brian!
John fucking Waters.
The audacity of this movie.
Audacity. Dude, how could it not be an 11?
How could it not be an 11?
How do you even come up with some of this stuff? I mean, it is offensive, disgusting. And it's pushing the boundaries in a way that you have to know what the boundaries are, and you have to make it playful enough for people to not lose the plot.
You have to welcome people to the boundary.
Yeah.
Like, you're not just playing within the boundaries. You're saying, come to the edge with me, and let's kind of just dip our toe on the other side. And then also, I'm going to throw you into the other side. We're getting uncomfortable together.
We'll hold hands as we jump over the line together. Yeah.
This has to be an 11. This Absolutely. Is one of the most insane movies I've ever seen in my life.
Ever. It's an 11 for audacity. Next category, just steamrolling right into it. Heart.
It also might be an 11.
I'm struggling with a way to even describe this film, even after we just walked through the plot. It's a fever dream.
We tried to walk through the plot, and it is a fever dream. But usually whenever we talk about Heart, we're talking about more the making of it.
Right.
More of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, obviously, what we see, that is what it is. But the behind-the-scenes stuff, we made a comment while watching this, that you can even see the actor's breath.
Yeah.
In this trailer, with this egg lady in her crib and her underwear. 22-hour shooting days in the freezing cold just to make this movie.
This movie.
This movie.
Sitting in your underwear in freezing temperatures, just eating eggs and trying to survive.
The actors played the marbles. They legitimately let themselves be tarred and feathered.
And they dyed their pubes.
They had to. Curtains had to match the drapes. You can't have blue hair and not have blue pubes. That would be weird.
That's law.
Divine literally followed a fucking dog around for 3 hours waiting for it to poop so they could eat it.
Yeah. They fed that dog nothing but steak for 3 days before that shot.
Just so it would poop, just to get this one last filthy butt into this movie.
Do you think feeding it steak was like kind of like a mercy thing for Divine? Like, all right, we don't want you to eat a kibble shit. We'll have the dog eat steak.
I don't think this is like a South Park human centipede situation.
I think
where they're
it
just
might
like
be.
Actually debating what the diet might be. I think they just wanted to get poop out of this dog.
Well, a dog's going to poop no matter what you feed it.
And there's also other dogs in the city. They could have followed other dogs around. Unless there aren't other dogs in Baltimore in 1970, I don't know. I wasn't there.
If I'm going to eat shit, it's going to be from a dog I know.
That's right. Don't eat strange dogs' shit.
Hart, John Waters. Does John Waters care?
Yes.
Yeah, but about what?
Nothing.
Well, that's interesting.
I mean, he's a true nihilist through and through. He considers himself what he calls the extreme middle. And it's more in the sense that he's like, well, I believe in this side and I believe in this stuff. And that's why I'm the middle. He's just like, no, I literally make fun of both sides called how I see it. Like, that's the middle. Is I will take shots at whoever I need to, whenever I need to. And we're going to have a little fun with it. Because that's kind of what it is all about with John Waters.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also a champion of subculture.
I got to go 10 on this one, man.
It feels right.
I want to go an 11. I don't know what it would take to get an 11 still.
Same. But yeah, I'm in agreement. It's a 10. The next category is technical incompetence. Editing, effects, sound, cinematography.
Is it incompetent?
I feel like there's some issues, like audio syncing issues, but it's clear that John Waters knows how to make a movie.
There's a lot of like weird sound delays going on, but this was all shot 60 millimeter in camera. Like the sound that you get is the sound that you get.
Right.
You can't separate it off of that film. So there are some weird sound things happening because John Waters edited himself. He had to make this thing work. I'm having a really hard time seeing incompetence in this movie. I think that John Waters is an incredibly confident filmmaker.
Yeah, and man, there are some shots framed in ways that you wouldn't expect, but they work. In a way that it makes it feel amateur, but intentionally so.
And I think that's important to note, too, because, again, we're only working with a $12,000 budget here.
Right. This is only shot on the weekends.
With the money he has, and with like this just group of friends, they're able to make this thing.
Yeah.
And it's not just a thing. Like 2021, this got into the National Film Registry. And it got in alongside movies like WALL-E and The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, and A Nightmare on Elm Street, and Star Wars, Return of the Jedi.
That's right. Return of the Jedi. And Pink Flamingos in the same class.
The same class!
And that is the Library of Congress going, hey, this film is culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. And in the same breath, I'm going to mention that it is Criterion Collection Spine number 1131.
I can tell you exactly what the National Film Register said about this movie, because they said, the movie poster tells the story, drag icon divine, resplendent in a red gown, perched on a cloud and brandishing a pistol beneath the tagline, an exercise in poor taste. Baltimore's favorite son, John Waters' delirious fantasia, centers on the search for the filthiest person alive and succeeds, but not before having a lot of outrageous fun along the way. This cult class is embraced by generations of filmmakers, considered a landmark in queer cinema. National Film Registry, you're leaving a lot out.
A lot, but some of it's best left out. As far as technical incompetence go, I think this is going to score kind of low.
Yeah, I think I want to go like a 2 or a 3.
Yeah.
In that ballpark.
I think I want to give it a 3 because I like it, damn it. Do I? I think so.
Oh, I love it, damn it. I put a lot of thought into this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, 3.
It's weird, but we reward failure because that's important.
Especially when you're talking B movies. It's taking the swing and missing a little bit. The next category is low-budget ingenuity.
It's through the roof.
I mean, $12,000 budget is, that's nothing.
It is nothing. And to pull whatever this is off and get away with it and then create this giant cult classic.
Yeah, yeah. Getting away with it is a big part of it, isn't it?
It really is a big part of it.
Like, this movie could have easily ended Everybody Connected's career.
And it should have. John Waters should have been canceled decades ago.
It's amazing that we have a thing called Hairspray.
It's amazing that we have something like Cecil B. DeMented.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy, his career should have ended maybe even before Pink Flamingos.
Probably, but he is such a fascinating person that he has this way of pulling people into things that he genuinely loves and loves tearing them apart and having just fun with trash. Again, yeah. The word trash.
Yeah, trash.
It just keeps coming up.
He knows exactly what he's doing, and it's the self-awareness, I think, that lets him get away with it. But as far as low-budget ingenuity, this is, I mean, it's amazing that it even exists. It's at least an 8.
I think I want to go with an 8.
Okay.
Not to mention the trailer for this movie that they used, they bought it for $100.
Really?
That's it.
I know that they weren't allowed to show any of the movie in the trailer.
Yeah.
Which, that tells you everything you need to know right there.
Pretty much. I'd say 8?
8. Next category is genre exploitation.
What's the genre?
That is exactly what I was going to ask you. What genre? What is this?
I would say this is a comedy, but it's so super self-aware at the
same time.
It's
so, yeah. Wikipedia calls it an independent black comedy crime film.
Oh, those are words that you could slap together in hopes of trying to pin this thing down,
like,
I guess.
Really throwing the shit at the fan and seeing what sticks.
I think that the best way to maybe describe what the genre that it's exploiting is describe what it isn't.
Okay.
And it's not camp. And I think that's really important for this movie, that it's not camp.
Interesting.
And I only want to bring that up because John Waters is very on record saying it's trash. It's not camp. It's trash. The way he describes camp is calling it like two older gay gentlemen talking about Tiffany lampshades in an antique shop. It's boring.
Okay.
It's dumb.
Okay.
He calls it trash because it's more rock and roll. It's more punk. It's more rebellious.
That's okay. I can see that. I don't know. I feel like it's just an extreme example of camp. That's interesting.
I mean, I can understand the extreme example of camp too, because this kind of feels like it's coming out of the era of like an Easy Rider.
Yes.
Where yeah. You still have that like counterculture punching, but this is kind of like the underground approach to it, of the nihilistic approach, really.
It's almost like a parody of that.
It's almost saying that where Easy Rider is a counterculture movie for, I don't want to say the masses, because it's not.
No.
But you do have
yeah.
these like up-and-coming stars in the thing that become giant Hollywood stars.
It's a very accessible counterculture movie.
That's a great way of putting it. Pink Flamingos is just as much of a counterculture movie.
But with no accessibility.
With almost no accessibility, because of how far it takes the satire of it all.
Right, right.
To the point that it's like, you don't even know what it actually is anymore. This is an exercise in poor taste.
Yeah, I would say that regardless of genre, there's an extreme level of exploitation here.
9.
9.
10.
I love it.
I can't. It's a 10.
It's exploitation on a level that defies genre.
Unbelievable. It's on the poster. They're saying what it is, and then it's that.
Yeah. 10.
Fuck, this movie's brilliant.
This movie is...
Wow.
Wow.
We, like...
My mind's
just
blown.
The way everything's feeling right now. Like, this has a chance of being the B-movie for a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is on the right path. Next category, the Holy Trinity. Blood, boobs, booms.
I don't think we got booms.
Here's the thing. We definitely got blood. We got people blood. We got chicken blood. We got blood. We got blood in troves.
Yeah.
Boobs. Fuck, we got plenty boobs. We got penises. We got vagines. We got full-on blowies.
Everything.
Booms. They light the trailer on fire. That's something, right?
It's not a boom.
It's not a boom.
Where's the kaboom?
Expecting an earth-shattering kaboom. Here's my pitch. We get a full 3 points for blood.
Okay.
We get 4 points for boobs.
That's fair, actually.
And we give a penny point for booms for the trailer fire.
I'll allow it. Because that's what the budget allowed.
Exactly. Budgetarily, they couldn't get a big kaboom.
Couldn't do it.
They could ignite a $100 trailer.
They could. They gave us extra boobs to make up for the lack of kaboom.
Exactly. So that's an 8 for the Holy Trinity.
I hate how math works, but I love that.
Up next, We have memorable characters.
How about we just go with everybody in this movie?
I mean, Divine herself gets a 10 out of 10.
Divine is putting on a proper performance in this movie.
Absolutely.
Like, full swing, full send, and it's landing.
Like, squishing dog shit between her teeth, full send.
That being said, I'm going to forget people in this movie. I'm never going to forget Edie in my life. The grandma eating eggs. Never. Yeah. Never. Edie, never going to forget Raymond Marble and his blue hair and his sausage on a sausage. Never. I'm never going to forget Cotton, because it was the weirdest pull ever. How I said, is that a Gene Harlow impersonator? To which super most people are going to say, who the fuck is Gene Harlow?
That's what I said.
And then I showed you a picture of Gene Harlow, and it turns out, yeah, it's exactly what it was.
100%.
Golden age of Hollywood nerd over here, folks. I love it.
I'm not forgetting Crackers either.
No, I'm going with like another 8 or 9. I'm way the hell up there.
Yeah, I feel like I'll probably forget about Channing and Cookie. I'll remember the Eggman.
9. That did it. That did it. You're right. Every time I hear I Am the Walrus and they say Eggman, I'm going to think of this asshole now.
This fucking guy with his briefcase of eggs. We know the characters are memorable, but what about the quotes?
I wrote down 2.
Okay.
Because this movie had a lot.
There were a ton.
But things I'm going to go back to.
Yeah.
I think are the ones that like the ones that stand out, the ones I wrote down. Connie Marble, she's very snobby. And she has a great line that says, I guess there's 2 kinds of people, my kind of people, and assholes. And I like that because she's an asshole.
She is definitely an asshole. I like that a lot. That's nice. I like that.
And then Divine, Bab Johnson, has a great monologue at the end.
Yes.
I don't know if it's a monologue or just it's yelly. We're just yelling out, just kill everyone now, condone first degree murder, advocate cannibalism, eat shit, filth is my politics, filth is my life.
I have another one that I wrote down that I think is an all-timer one-liner.
Juicy. Is it juicy?
It's not juicy, but juicy is very well used in this movie during the licking scene.
It's the licking scene where Divine almost forgets that it's a line that she needs to say. And stops.
Juicy.
Juicy. And then goes back to licking a couch.
No, the one that I wrote down was, Connie Marble, you stand convicted of assholism.
Assholism is so good, and I approve it all. I'm going to go down the middle and go 5.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Divine, are you a lesbian? Yes, I've done everything. baloney.
Oh, this movie, man. It's going to score so high, I can't wait.
Absolutely bananas.
I find myself like fighting for all these movies so far, and I don't know why.
I just want them all to do so good.
Oh, God, I love this.
Well, I think this one, we probably know where this is going to go. Entertainment value.
10. I can't believe it. I wanted to look away, and I did, but it kept coming back.
But you kept coming back. Yeah, this thing has a weird magnetism to it that you don't want to watch, but you kind of have to.
You want to. It's not a have. This isn't like a need. Like, you want to watch what's going on here.
You want to gaze deeply into this man's singing asshole.
I looked into a man's brown eye, and I saw not only his large and small intestine, but hope. More importantly.
Hope. I found hope in that butthole.
In that butthole. I looked in.
I saw a man prolapse his own anus to look like a tongue.
Yeah, I can't believe that happened either. Oh God! No, fuck it, 10. This is
sure.
Movies don't get made like this anymore.
No, this is a one of a kind movie, and it has to be seen to be believed.
And you should see it. Like, I'll throw that out even before we get to the cultability. The cultability of this thing is probably a 10 or 11. Also, Brian, let's just face it.
Cultability. You call it like you see it.
This is a borderline perfect B movie, folks.
It is a movie that has to be seen to be believed. I guarantee you it's more fun to watch with other people than it is alone.
Don't watch this thing alone. Don't do that. This is like the type of movie where you watch it alone, then you get like a VPN and start getting weird shit after.
Yeah, this is not a solo movie. And I feel like if you do watch it alone, it's a very different experience.
I'm a little curious now, honestly. Now, especially now I know what to expect.
I feel like you would feel very dirty watching this movie alone.
I'm fine with that. That's how I'm supposed to feel. I'm supposed to go along for the ride on this. It's crazy. It's a movie about the filthiest person in the world defending their title and going at it hard. And the stakes, I don't want to say they escalate because they don't.
No, the stakes are pretty steady.
Just keeps getting filthier and filthier and filthier and filthier. And the bar keeps raising. And John Waters holds your hand the entire way through this thing. I'm like, no, we're going to get through this together, buddy. This is happening.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to kill a chicken, but that's just the start. We're just getting you warmed up.
This might be one of the most cultable movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, even to the point when people see it in movie theaters, they have the Pink Flamingos Challenge.
God, the Pink Flamingos Challenge.
Where they pass out chocolate to the audience, and the audience has to eat it while Divine is eating dog shit on screen.
That's just evil.
But they also sometimes hand out vomit bags, which I really like, and they call them the Pink Flamingos.
Gotta love it.
Yeah, 10. Send it.
10. This is a cult level akin to Rocky Horror. This really exists in the Midnight Circuit. This
is a very big score. It has to be.
It is a big score. Surprisingly, not our biggest.
Is it because we talked about Toxic Avenger another time?
It is because we talked about Toxic Avenger another
that
time.
That makes perfect sense. Trovo has a leg up on a lot of stuff sometimes.
Yeah, but this still scored very high.
I could tell you somebody who didn't score it high.
Who?
Roger Ebert. He saw this movie in 1997.
Okay, the re-release.
He said, John Waters' Pink Flamingos has been restored for its 25th anniversary revival, and with any luck at all, that means I won't have to see it again for another 25 years. He made sure to put a note on the end of his review stating, I'm not giving a star rating to Pink Flamingos, because stars simply seem not to apply. It should be considered not as a film, but as a fact, or perhaps as an object.
Okay. In a way, it kind of feels like he respects it.
I'm not sure it's true, because in Roger Ebert's very short review of this movie, he asked himself, how do you review a movie like this?
That's a great question.
He said that he got reminded of an interview that he once did with a man who ran a carnival sideshow. His star was a geek who bit the heads off alive chickens and drank their blood.
Seems on par.
The man assured Roger Ebert he's the best geek in the business, to which Roger Ebert asked him, what's the difference between a good geek and a bad geek? The man answered, you want to examine the chickens? He acknowledges that this movie is made for those types of people. Not saying that's a bad thing.
Right.
He acknowledges those people are out there. There's something for everyone, a stroke for every folk.
Interesting. So he's kind of saying it's not for him, but he sees that there's an audience for it.
He does, and he says what seems to happen in the movie really does happen, and that's kind of a redeeming quality, because if the events were only simulated, it would merely be depraved and disgusting. So the fact that John Waters went the whole way, he achieved what he set out to do.
That's a fascinating way of looking at it, that it would be worse if he just pretended to do the things.
So instead, he did the things. He actually went for it, and he did the things, and frankly, made some fucking cinematic history doing it.
Oh, absolutely. I also found some reviews that I quite enjoyed for this movie. And one of those was from Letterboxd.
Yeah.
And it was a 4-star review with a heart that said, this is the future liberals want.
Not wrong.
Some other fun Letterboxd reviews I found. No score assigned to this one. Just straight up, could you give us some of your political beliefs? Kill everyone now. That is the number one liked.
It's a nihilistic review. Movie. No one's denying that.
Yeah. Alvin from Alvin and Chipmunks has canonically watched this movie.
You're kidding me.
That is something that's mentioned. I guess John Waters has a cameo in one of the Chipmunks movies. And Alvin has canonically seen Pink Flamingos.
This is such a good movie, man.
So good. Rotten Tomatoes, critically, 84%. So it's a good thing we don't do the Beer Me a Movie thing anymore, because we'd be drinking. We gave this an 84.
Jeez, I'm happy we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Even though I'll happily drink this movie any day, because this movie fucks. Literally, figuratively.
Literally, yeah. It's
it fucks.
This movie fucks its own kid.
And chickens.
And also chickens. It kills them in the process.
So that has been Pink Flamingos from 1972, directed by John fucking Waters. Brian, I need a palate cleanser real bad.
Real bad.
So for episode 5, I'm just going to tell the AI that we need a palate cleanser real bad and let it come out with what we should watch next.
Yeah, that sounds totally fair.
All right, so I've plugged in a request of, please, God, give us a palate cleanser because we just watched a man's asshole sing. Brian, it gave us a palate cleanser.
I'm very intrigued.
And I know it's a movie you've never seen before, and that is even more exciting.
Most of them I haven't, so.
Because for our next episode, in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be talking about the 2002 movie, Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
Oh, hell yeah.
I feel like better about everything all of a sudden. Like the Pink Flamingos is just lifted off of me.
Yeah, yeah.
Now we're about to get real weird with Gopher Chucks, and I can't wait.
Oh, that's exciting. A weight has been lifted.
Not yet, it hasn't. You've never seen the thing. This is going to be a very, very, very fun, good old-fashioned schlock hop when we watch it all together.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be very exciting. If you want to be a part of that, join us on our Discord. You can find a link to that in the show notes. That's the B-Movie Boys Discord channel. While you're checking out those show notes, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. We're a new podcast. We need to get our name out in front of as many people as possible. So when you rate, review, subscribe, the algorithm works in our favor. Share this with your friends. Let them know that there's a new podcast in town.
With your old friends, though.
With your old friends, exactly.
We've been doing this now for a while, and we appreciate everybody who's stuck around with us, who's listened, newcomers, oldcomers. It's Pink Flamingos week, so it's just generally comers.
Just all the comers.
Anytime you go on, you rate, review, subscribe, it helps us an absolute ton. We can't thank you enough for doing it. If you haven't done it already, you're a terrible person, and you need to write your own ship.
Write your own ship or eat a dog's shit.
This is like, if you do this, then you don't have to like go to confession or whatever it is. Like, I'll hand to the cross or whatever they do. You're good.
Forgiven.
Rate, review, subscribe, and then you're forgiven for all your sins. You're welcome.
You can also join us on Patreon for some exclusive bonus content. It's patreon.com/capedpodcasters. That'll be updated soon, I'm sure.
You made it sound like it was just exclusive content. It is years worth of content.
For
years.
A plethora of shows and ideas. It's kind of our playground, our little workshop where we try new things out.
It is. And the January episode will be up soon. Thanks for holding out on that one, folks. To say that there were technical issues would be an understatement.
One of the biggest understatements of all time. You can follow us on social media at @BMovieBoys on Instagram, Facebook. We're always posting to keep everybody updated on our good old-fashioned schlock hops and our episode posts, all the good stuff. And you can send emails to bmovieboyspod@gmail.com, and we will read those on air.
Brian, you got anything else?
That is all for me.
Fantastic. Be sure to set your VCRs for March 18th when we talk about Kung Pao Enter the Fist. And until then, in the immortal words of the weird pretzel man on the pedestal just showing his asshole to the entire world as he was singing his song,
good journey.